the official death toll from the coronavirus is nearing 2 million globally, but that count doesn't reflect the full extent of the pandemic's impact.
What it misses is really two big things. And number one is people who died from COVID-19, but it wasn't written down on the death certificate, or it wasn't recorded that way. In other words, missed COVID-19 deaths. And then the other one is essentially collateral damage, people who died for other reasons that you can associate with the pandemic.
We'll talk more about why public health experts say it's important to get an accurate measure, and why markets wavered ahead of President-elect Joe Biden's stimulus speech tonight. Plus, why some New Yorkers are choosing to get vaccinated after midnight. It's Thursday, January 14th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. The Senate trial in the second impeachment of President Trump could coincide with the first week of President-elect Joe Biden's term. The Senate won't return to Washington until January 19th, the day before Biden's inauguration. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has signaled he's open to convicting the president for statements he made before last week's riot at the Capitol. But McConnell said a trial won't wrap up until after President Trump leaves office. There's also a lot to tackle on Biden's agenda. Democrats are seeking to quickly confirm his nominees and pass another coronavirus relief bill. The coronavirus pandemic continues to weigh heavily on the U.S. economy. U.S. unemployment claims rose to 965,000 last week, their highest level since mid-August, according to the Labor Department. Claims had been averaging about 800,000 a week in recent months. As we reported this morning, President-elect Joe Biden will unveil the details of his stimulus plans tonight. Stocks wavered this afternoon, ultimately ending the day down. The Dow fell 69 points, or 0.2%. The Nasdaq closed down 0.1%, and the S&P 500 dropped 0.4%. Our markets reporter, Akani Otani, has more on what investors are anticipating.
Investors are definitely hoping to hear something quite ambitious, starting with direct aid for households and small businesses. I think that's definitely priority number one for a lot of investors, just given how bad the jobs data has been recently. Investors are really recognizing that for the market to be able to continue its recovery, we're going to have to see more spending from the government and more of an economic pickup, because the situation that we're currently in right now, I think a lot of investors recognize it's quite fragile.
Shares of Poshmark, an online marketplace for secondhand goods, more than doubled in its trading debut today. Private companies have been taking advantage of investor enthusiasm for new listings. Shares of Airbnb more than doubled in its trading debut last month, while DoorDash's stock soared 86% in its offering. Speaking of Airbnb, the home sharing company has said it will cancel reservations in the Washington, D.C. area during inauguration week, citing guidance from federal and local authorities over concerns of further violence following last week's riot at the Capitol. The company says it will refund guests and hosts in full. Airbnb also said it's conducted a review of its users and identified and banned those it found to be associated with hate groups or involved in the riot at the Capitol. And the latest climate data from NASA shows 2020 tied 2016 for the warmest year on record. That's despite cooling ocean currents and a drop in greenhouse gas emissions. Gavin Schmidt is the director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies.
We're in a position where we're pushing the climate system out of the bounds that it's been in for tens of thousands of years. And that's if not millions of years.
At times last year, the Arctic averaged 12 degrees Fahrenheit above normal. Coming up after the break, why the death toll from COVID-19 is even worse than it looks.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
This week brought more sobering news on the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. reported more than 200,000 new coronavirus cases for the ninth day in a row on Wednesday. On Tuesday, the U.S. recorded more than 4,300 deaths, a new high. And a Wall Street Journal data analysis finds the global death toll, currently nearing 2 million, is far worse than the official numbers indicate. Here now to explain is Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp. Hi, John. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
So, John, worldwide, the death toll due to the coronavirus is nearing 2 million, but a Wall Street Journal analysis found that it's actually far higher than that, more than 2.8 million. What's not being captured in the official tallies we have right now?
So the official tallies, and we use a count from Johns Hopkins University, which tries to capture in real time the data that each country puts out saying, here's how many people died from coronavirus. But that data is just the known deaths that were linked to the disease. What it misses is really two big things. And number one is people who died from COVID-19, but it wasn't written down on the death certificate or it wasn't recorded that way. In other words, missed COVID-19 deaths. And then the other one is essentially collateral damage, people who died for other reasons that you can associate with the pandemic. And that also doesn't get captured in a count of just COVID-19 deaths. The U.S. has been a helpful place because of pretty good data from the CDC to explore this. And what we've seen is that there have been increases in deaths in things like Alzheimer's and dementia and some cardiovascular issues and things like diabetes. And health experts we've spoken with have said that this likely represents collateral damage from the pandemic. And, you know, for people with Alzheimer's and dementia, that could be some of the effects of lockdowns and disruptions in nursing homes that, you know, proved damaging for really fragile people in those settings. For, you know, in the springtime in particular, there were instances where, you know, people were afraid to go to hospitals when they were having chest pains. And so that could mean people having more heart attacks that prove fatal at home.
And these are what are known as excess deaths.
This all goes into the bigger bucket called excess deaths. And this is something that scientists commonly use to try and really kind of measure the impact of a major event, whether it's a heat wave or a hurricane or a war, because sometimes official counts associated with those events can miss the bigger picture. So what scientists do, and this is what we did too in a fairly simple way, is you look for the average number of deaths in every country or in the place that you're interested in where there was a major event, and then you find out how much deaths have increased over a period of time above that average. And that tells you that there's, you know, an unusual bulge. And then you try and figure out what makes up that bulge. And what we found is that in most countries that we looked at, COVID-19 will generally make up most of that, but certainly not all of it. And that tells us that there's something else going on beyond just the disease itself.
Tallying excess deaths has also helped to provide a more accurate picture in other world crises, right?
Sure, yes. Other examples would be like when a heat wave hit France in 2003, and tallying up excess deaths helped researchers associate that with roughly 15,000 deaths. Another good example closer to the U.S., of course, was when Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico in 2017. And looking over a longer period of time at really the aftermath of the hurricane led researchers to tally up nearly 3,000 deaths that they associated with that event. And that's an important example because there, you know, in a hurricane, you have the immediate deaths that are caused by the howling wind and the floodwaters. But then you can also have after effects, like people who died when there are disruptions to the healthcare system and long-running power outages.
Public health experts say an accurate tally is essential to understanding the scope of the pandemic and helping to bring it under control. John, tell us more about what you heard from experts about why counting excess deaths is so important in this tally.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's because you want to really discover and shine a light on the problems. And to take an example again from the U.S., it became fairly apparent after the surge in virus cases in the spring that when hospitals were overwhelmed or there was news of hospitals being overwhelmed, people were afraid to go to hospitals to seek emergency care. So learning that there was non-COVID-19 excess deaths in that period of time helped scientists and researchers and major health associations understand that they really needed to improve their outreach, improve their messaging, make sure that people understood, even if the hospital is dealing with a surge in COVID cases, that doesn't mean the emergency room is shut down, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't call 911 for someone having a stroke or a heart attack.
Of course, this involves a lot of data and different countries are tabulating it in different ways. Can you tell us about some of the complications in getting an accurate picture when we're talking about this amount of data and the different ways of collecting it across the globe?
One of the interesting things about the pandemic is that it has really accelerated in some ways efforts in countries to try and produce mortality data that help us find out in nearly in real time what's going on. But that is still a very, very incomplete picture globally. We were able to find data from countries representing roughly a quarter of the globe's population thus far. Although they tend to be more of the hard hit countries. So our countries also represent roughly three quarters of known COVID-19 deaths. But there's a lot of countries not there. You know, there's, for example, parts of Asia and Africa where they don't necessarily have a sophisticated mortality data function there. And so it can be a bit of a longer effort for epidemiologists and researchers working with health authorities in those countries to really, you know, gain a better understanding of what happened. And so this is a puzzle that with millions of pieces that will be coming together for many years.
John, what does the data that we do have now tell us about what we might expect in the next several months worldwide?
That is a great question and one I want to be careful about because, you know, I can't be confident if the countries that we have are a perfectly representative sample. In other words, if we have 25% of the world, does that mean whatever we found in those countries we can multiply by four? I'm not so sure yet. And we have to be careful about that. You know, we're awaiting data from China, for example. China's the world's biggest country by population, almost 1.4 billion people. They have not had that many recorded COVID deaths. So when you add in China to the mix, and if we end up learning they had more COVID deaths than we thought for some reason, that's against an enormous population. So, you know, it could very well be that we learn that the death toll in China isn't that far off of what it would normally be, for example. So there's a lot of unknowns still. And another thing to think about, too, is that even as we rush to try and vaccinate as many people as fast as possible, that there are long-term effects from the pandemic that we still don't understand and that we're going to see playing out maybe for years to come.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp. John, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And finally, as the coronavirus vaccines are rolled out across the country, in some places there have been delays and confusion over who can get the shots and when. In New York City, two 24-hour vaccination sites open this week. They're nearly booked during the day, but some of those who are currently eligible for the shots are finding there's plenty of room in the middle of the night. Photographer Gabriella Basker went to one vaccination site at the Brooklyn Army Terminal to see what it's like after midnight. She spoke with second grade teacher Sidra Mallory.
I mean, the fact that they're doing this 24 hours a day, there were a lot of appointments. I think people who did it a little bit later, they had to wait a little bit longer, but it's really not, right now, it doesn't seem like it's that hard.
Okay.
Most people I know who want them are getting them.
You can see Gabriella's photos of people who got vaccinated after hours at WSJ.com. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.